Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bribe or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for SN Fresen Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m. where it's all about the food.
Good morning and welcome to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 FM. Thank you so much for joining me. It's lovely being here on this lovely fresh morning. And we have a great show lined up. There's some fun in the sun, actually, brying, a wonderful roast for Shabbos, and a wonderful guest by the name of Muhawu Sishowe. And with her, she'll be talking to us about her new bestseller. Really, it raced right to the top as she launched it. The Lazy McCourty's Guide to the Kitchen. And what is a Lazy McCourty? A Lazy McCourty is a lazy daughter-in-law, which none of you are, I'm sure. So, she's everything us ladies ever want to know about South African food. And we'll be talking to her. I'll be sharing some of her recipes with you. And, but the first recipe I have to share with you obviously comes from something that happened during the week. So what started off as a simple sort of Thursday afternoon turned into an exciting experimental one. So I got a phone call from a friend. She says, "Shaw, I've got a side bowl from you guys. How should I cook it?" Okay, so this landed up being the fun in the sun with the side bolo because, you know, as you know, I love brying and then I just stick it in the oven. And it's actually, side bolo is such a tender cut. And actually, I was talking to my friend Trevor from Maxi's the other day, and he was saying, if only people realized how beautiful and how tender a side bolo is. I mean, everybody wants a scotch fillet, but it's a side bolo that actually gets you out of a lot of trouble. And it feeds about 3 to 4 people. So it's one of my favorite cuts. And if you were to ask me for a versatile cut, this has to be it. I mean, you can bry it. You can cut it in half. You can butterfly it. You can cube it. You can cut into tender minced steaks. I mean, there's just so much that you can do with it. So what I did with it, because now I've got to get back to my friend's roast, what I did with it was I cut it horizontally, like through the middle. Okay, but not quite all the way through. So I'm sort of like butterflying it when you opened it. So if you cut it all the way through, what you'd be left with is probably 2 lovely long steaks, about 2 to 3 centimeters thick, you know, depending on how big your side bolo is, and about 12 to 15 centimeters long. Now, some people don't even bother removing the sinew or that sheath that runs through the piece because it actually just melts into the meat and sort of disintegrates in a roast. But that's, of course, if you're cooking it for over low and slow. Now, this is one of those cuts that you can actually bry over high heat and almost serve immediately, and it's really delicious. In fact, this is what I do when I make my Thai steak salad. I actually cut it in half, fry it on both sides very quickly, about 10 minutes each side over high heat, and then I slice it sort of on the diagonal and put those pieces of steak on top of the lettuce. So what I did was, for this roast, I butterflied it, cut that sort of sheath out the middle. There are a couple of, you'll see a couple of little white bits of sinew fat running through. Don't worry about those little ones. You just want to get that piece of grizzle at the end and then the thin sheets out. And then what I did was I stuffed it with good old chimichurri sauce. Now you can, excuse me, I'm getting a cold, excuse me. Then I stuffed it, okay, with the chimichurri sauce, which you can either use the princess pesto, which is kosher. I think you can get it at Norwood Spa. You can get it at the Haparama. And if, but if you don't, I know theirs is quite a spicy one with coriander. If you don't like coriander, as quite a few of us don't, then just use regular pesto. It's, but don't put it, you know, mustn't be too thick. It must sort of be about a centimeter along the inside of the butterflied piece of side bolo. Then I close them together and put a little bit of oil on the top and put a little bit of seasoning, garlic, whatever. And I put it onto a braai, very high heat, and I cooked it for 10 minutes on each side. And then I put them into the oven at about 110 and left it there until Shabbos came in. You can put it in a warmer oven if you've got one, but you don't have to cook it all the way through. And when I say it tasted like butter, okay, maybe I shouldn't compare meat to butter, but it was magnificent. And by the way, this was a fresh cut of meat, piece of meat. It wasn't one that I'd vacuum packed and aged and whatever for 3 weeks. It was something that, okay, yeah, I've got one left for you, use it. So, of course, you can use it for curry. It's a nice, tender cut. If you cut it up, cube it, use it for curry, use it to make cubed steak pie. So you don't have to cook the steak so long until it's tender as you would do with a round bowler. Now, don't get this confused, this piece of meat confused with a round bowler. Round bowler is quite a tough cut of meat. Side bolo isn't. And the best assorties I know are made with side bolo. It's just soft and delicious. And you, as I say, if you wanted to make a quick stew, this is the best cut of meat to use. I use it, I cut it up into sort of not tiny little cubes, about 5 centimeters by 5 centimeters. And in winter, I serve it with, oh, lovely beans and butter beans, of course, and dumplings. Oh, and it's delicious. It keeps you going. And you don't need that much meat because you've got all the other vegetables in it. So, as I said, cutting it in half is the best way. Slicing it, brying it as a half a piece is also terrific. And then you just slice it up as you would for a steak salad, however you like to make your steak salad. So thank you to my friend Pam who phoned, and you can thank Pam, all of you, for phoning and asking me at the last minute, give me a recipe because I've got special people coming and they always go out of their way for me. Now I need something special. So that was our side bolo. And after the break, I'm coming back with a lovely recipe for soup because it's winter and we don't want something too heavy and beany and stocky, but something light and yet still creamy. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, and I am now sharing with you a wonderful eggplant soup. Now, 25 years ago, if somebody said to me, aubergine or eggplant, as we call it, I would say, no thanks, no, 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 that I can't. Okay. Today, if somebody says to me, eggplant, I say, bring it to the eggplant auntie. I love eggplant, no matter how we do it, whether we stick it in the oven on high heat and turn it into a beautiful eggplant salad, blend it together with garlic and a little bit of mayonnaise, whether we fry it in a little bit of chili, eggplant is just such a wonderful, wonderful vegetable. And actually, a lot of people like to put it in their stews. So if they don't want to put that much meat in, they stick in cubed eggplant. So suddenly I'm at that age where avocados have become a big part of my life. Hated them when I was younger, but it took me 20 odd years to enjoy them. And we had, growing up as a little girl, this huge avocado tree in our garden. And it was such a waste because I couldn't eat avocado. We used to go down for Pesach. And I just, today, love my avocado on matzah meal. But so every time I see those avocado driving along, I think it's in Seraldine, they're selling those beautiful Durban Natal avos. I swerve in and I have to get them. So if you think that your taste buds aren't going to change, they do, believe me. So many times I hear people saying, sweet potato, don't bring it near me. And then all of a sudden they go on to diet blah, 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 where they have to eat sweet potato. And all of a sudden they fall in love with it. So, you know, our tastes are going to change. But for those whose tastes don't change and for those who see things in the kitchen and sort of say to you, Ma, you're not using those aubergines, hey, in the vegetables of the soup. I thought, well, you know what? I'm known as the, what did my kids call me? I can't remember. Something about, I'll think about it. They call me the disguiser, the greatest disguiser and concealer and hidden conspirator of Highlands North. I think my mother was that. Why? Because my mother would take hake or a sole, hake or kinglip, and she would cut it into thin pieces when we were growing up. So there's no bones, you couldn't see anything. And she would pretend to my brother that it was sole because he only ate deboned sole. So I think she actually deserved that title as the hidden conspirator. Now, anyway, let's get back to this beautiful aubergine stroke eggplant salad. I don't know if it was because I received a box of aubergine as a gift from a friend who got them from a farm, and her family don't eat eggplant, never. But whatever it was, there was no way these eggplants were going to waste. And because they perished quite quickly, I thought, no, I've got to do something with them. So I stuck them into the oven. Well, I'll give you the recipe exactly because I wrote it down. This time I wrote it down. I didn't just make it and go, where did I put in it? But I made some, I put some aside, sliced it up and fried them, and I put that lovely balsamic and onion and garlic sauce with it and a little bit of olive oil, and I kept that in a jar so that it wouldn't go to waste. Some, of course, I used to make pureed eggplant dip. What really turned out the best for me was definitely this aubergine soup. And for those who say, I don't eat eggplant, they ate it without even realizing they were. So this soup took on the name of Fresh Tuscan Soup. Why? Because I told them that my future daughter-in-law got the recipe and she and my son had it recently in Tuscany, and nobody knew any the wiser. They didn't know what went in it. And I said, so this is a lovely undisclosed Tuscan soup. What you will need, now I doubled up because I had quite a few eggplants, but what you will need is 1 kilo of eggplants. You want the firm ones. Okay. And if they're a little too small, don't worry about it if it's too small, if they're small, because it doesn't matter. You want to get in the end 1 kilo of eggplant. So what I did was, you'll also need, 5 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 cups of sliced or chopped onion. Yeah, the onion's going to give it that lovely taste. Salt and pepper. And I'm so excited I was able to use my new celery salt, because Woolworths haven't had it and I've been begging for I don't know how long. It's the best spice. It's the most bland dish turns into the most delicious dish when you use a teaspoon of celery salt. So, as I said, salt and pepper and a bit of celery salt. 6 cloves of garlic, yes. Now, garlic goes really well with aubergine, so put the garlic in. A pinch of cayenne pepper. Some like it a little hot. Others, you know, can put in a teaspoon of paprika. It's not so spicy as the cayenne pepper. And you'll also need 6 cups of chicken broth, liquid, or vegetable broth, the liquid. And you just follow the instructions on the box. So if you buy a tower box of vegetable mix, to see what they say that you have to add to the liquid, and that's what you add. Don't do what a friend of mine did, and she put 6 cups of chicken soup powder into the soup. Okay, so you want to make up a broth. You'll also need about 3 tablespoons of lemon juice. Now, taste it after you've added the lemon juice, because some people don't like it too lemony. You'll need half a teaspoon of finely grated lemon zest. It just like gives it a little bit of a zing. And then 1 tablespoon of za'atar. You may need a little bit more za'atar, because I like to sprinkle a little bit of za'atar on top of the soup. It's available at most of the supermarkets today. And 2 teaspoons of chopped parsley, freshly chopped parsley. You can do freshly chopped coriander if you want to, but I know some people don't like it. So you preheat the oven to the highest point that you can get it up to, and you poke 2 or 3 holes into the eggplants with a fork, and then you place it on a baking sheet on the highest heat, and you cook until they're soft, because you really want to get that smoky flavor into the soup. So you cook it for about 5-10 minutes, even longer sometimes, allowing the skins to blacken and to char. And then you take them out when you feel that they're using a cloth, of course, feel if they're soft enough, and then remove them and just let them set aside until they're cool. Okay, then you peel off the skins, and meanwhile put 3 tablespoons of olive oil into a heavy-bottomed pot, an enamel pot or heavy-bottomed pot, whatever you have, on medium-high heat. You add the onions, and you season it with the salt and the pepper and the celery salt, and you cook it until it's softened and starts coloring like a nice, light golden brown. About 5 to 7 minutes. Then you add the garlic, keep stirring, the cayenne pepper, and then you add the eggplant, and you cook it all together for about, bring it to a nice simmer, reduce the heat, and you put the lid on, reduce the heat to the lowest, put the lid on, okay, and then you add the broth, salt and pepper, taste it a little bit, add the lemon juice, taste it, add only 3 tablespoons of the lemon juice. You may want to add a little bit more, and you puree it. So you can use, either you can use a liquidizer, food processor, a hand blender, an immersion blender, whatever you want to, so that the soup is really smooth. And you can, of course, put it through a muslin cloth, or you can put it through a very fine strainer, you know, because sometimes the little pips in the eggplant don't blend in. So you really, and especially if you don't want them to know what's in the soup, you've got to really blend it smooth, and you've got to put it through a muslin cloth or a sieve. Now, the little extra thing that I added to mine, which I think also tried to hide the secret in the soup, and that was I swirled in at the end just a little bit of tahina, and then I decorated with a little bit more za'atar. So that's the recipe. I mean, it's quite easy. You can add your coriander and parsley at this point as well, or you can add it to the soup, the soup. When you cook the onions, you can add your greens there, coriander or parsley. So that is quite a delicious soup. But as I say, it's all, you know, depending on you. If you want to make it even more creamy, of course, you can add some of the Orly Whip, the one with the, I think it's like an orangey brown lid, because that's for savory food, and that also makes it a little bit more creamy. But remember, it should be quite a thick soup, because you want all those little, you want the za'atar to sit on top of it. You can add so many different things. If you want, you can add the the fried bread, croutons. I mean, there's a lot that you can add to the soup to make it really special. After the break, I'm coming back with some wonderful recipes from the Lazy Makoti, but we'll have a chat to her first before we share her recipes.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
I was very excited to receive the Lazy Makoti's Guide to the Kitchen by Mogau Seshweni. Now, I'm really excited about this because there was one statement made in this book, and it was, it has always been my wish, meaning your wish, that our African food gets the respect and global exposure it deserves. And once I read that, I thought, okay, this is going to be a book for me to read. So first of all, the title of the book, The Lazy Makoti. For those who don't understand what a makoti is, please explain it to us.
So makoti means daughter-in-law or bride in Zulu. So the lazy makoti would be the lazy daughter-in-law.
Aha. Okay. So now, that's something you don't ever want to be called. Not by, no. Not by a mother-in-law. So, now, what actually, how did it all start with you and the book, and what inspired you to write this book? I know you give, cooking classes and things like that, mm-hmm. but what inspired you?
The book really happened as a result of all the requests that I got during my cooking classes. So how the business started is I was working in corporate as an auditor, and a friend of mine who was due to get married asked me to give her cooking lessons, and she specifically wanted to learn to make traditional South African food. That's how the business started. I started giving these cooking classes, and each time everyone would ask, is there a book that goes with this? When I get home, can I recreate this using a cookbook? Yes. And that's when I decided to put together this cookbook.
Aha. Uh-huh. But now some daughters-in-law, okay, yes. don't they have to go and live with their mother-in-law so that, mm-hmm. that she can teach her daughter-in-law, future daughter-in-law, how to cook so that her husband never ever has to say, this is not how I like my cooking. You need to follow my mother's recipe.
Yes, that is exactly how and why the Lazy Makoti happened. This friend of mine knew that she didn't have all of that time to go live with her mother-in-law in rural KZN learn how to make all of these dishes. That's why she asked me. And she kept saying she's so nervous that her new family will call her the Lazy Makoti. And that's how the name happened.
Okay. So where did you learn to cook?
I grew up in rural Limpopo. So my grandmother and my mother taught me how to cook. And this is way before I went to culinary school.
Right. And then you went to culinary school as well?
Yes. So after I left my job in corporate, I then enrolled for a culinary course at Chef's Innovation and Training Academy in Centurion, and then I got my diploma.
Uh-huh. Now, I'm busy looking at the cover of the book, and I want to tell you something, that we would call you like a real kugel. I mean, she's just gorgeous. She's out there. She's
and
that's a compliment, because you really are gorgeous. And you're saying to the girls out there, come on girls, you know what? We also want to cook traditional food as well, not just all this lovely food that we're eating at these restaurants in Johannesburg. And I'm looking through this and I see, oh, you styled your own book. Now that's very impressive, because that is hard work.
And it really is.
Yes. And so now I see that you've actually merged the two worlds together, modern and traditional. So how did you know which book, how did you know which market you were going to cover, and how did you know which recipe would go down well in this book?
I guess that I knew that, as, you know, a South African living in the times that we live in now, I'm still very much as traditional as I am modern. So yes. It was very important for me to be able to merge those two worlds. I felt like every time I picked up a cookbook, I didn't feel like it was written with me in mind. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted a book that celebrates being South African, everything that it means to be South African. Yes. That is, for me, both traditional and modern.
Right. And as all the ingredients, obviously, are easily available. Now, excuse me, when this book goes international, which I'm sure it will, will all the ingredients, will they be able to get most of the ingredients? Have you given options? Because a lot of, you know, a lot of people listening to the show live all over the world. And I'm sure they really want to learn how to make traditional South African food. So the ingredients, are they all easily available?
So when I was putting together the cookbook, obviously the consumer that I had in mind was a South African consumer. Right. And I wanted it to be very simple, not only the methods of cooking, but also the ingredients, so that you're not put off cooking, which I believe is what happens with most cookbooks.
Yes.
It looks amazing, the styling is really wonderful, but you read through the recipe and you're so intimidated that you end up not even using it.
Yes.
So I wanted this cookbook to really be useful. I wanted you to be able to page through any page of this book and be able to confidently recreate what's in the book.
And the pictures,
but like
are
I said, thank you. Like I said, the ingredients really are easy. They should be easy to find anyway. There'll just be like a few, like the Mobani worms, may not be as easy for someone that's not in South Africa to find. Yeah.
And we don't want to try taking them overseas and get caught at customs. So, how do you enjoy cooking and catering and, you know, all these kinds of things? You slip on your high heel shoes and off you clunk into the kitchen. And what does a machau make?
So I really enjoy, as you can obviously tell from the book, very simple, easy, hearty, warm cooking. I believe that food is, you know, a great source of comfort for many, and it's about family, it's about sharing. All of the recipes in the book speak to that, because it's how I grew up, and I believe a lot of South Africans grew up. You know, food is how you express your love.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and I often hear people saying, I need to go into Soweto. I need to have my Sunday meal. That's home cooking. That's what I need to get back to. So this is, you're trying to incorporate that as well into your suburban home life, I'm sure.
Definitely 100%.
Okay. Now, what advice would you give a newlywed?
What advice would I give a newlywed? I think if everything stems from love, it'll be received that way. And lucky for you, there's this really easy cookbook that's out there for you to try out all these amazing recipes to bring warmth into your home.
That's right.
But I think your efforts will be appreciated if they come from a place of love.
I hope so. You know, sometimes, but then I've been married a long time, and my family are quite critical. And sometimes I think to myself, I go to the table and I say, "Here you go, guys. This was made with such love." And they taste it and they go, "Ma, not too much love in the next dish, please." So obviously that wasn't a good dish. Now, have you ever traveled around the world and taken on any inspiration from those culinary cuisines?
Yes. I have been to a few places in the States, Wisconsin and Chicago and Washington.
Yes.
I've traveled a bit around the continent. Actually, the last chapter of the book is a little inspired by the rest of the continent. There's some stuff from West Africa. some stuff in there from Angola. So I really tried to get African food in the book because I believe that that's the food that's not getting, you know, as much love and as much spotlight.
Yes. And it is, I mean, it's really, I've just paged through this. It's beautiful, just beautiful pictures, beautiful salads, butternut soups, baked honey and mustard, chicken, things that aren't going to take forever to cook. Mm-hmm. And as a modern woman, I don't know if I can call myself so modern anymore, but as a modern woman, now we know where to go to learn about authentic African food. We have to go to the Lazy Makoti's Guide to the Kitchen. Beautiful lady sitting with her glass of red wine in a red apron. And it's all about tradition, preserving and passing down this knowledge. Right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is. Definitely.
So I want to tell you, I learned a lot and I'm so happy that you came on the show. I know that you are extremely busy and it was so wonderful to talk to you. And after this, I'm going to be giving out some of your wonderful recipes.
So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And we'll start cooking after the break.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. Oh, it's not the Cooking Corner. It's the Essen Fresen Show. I told you I had to practice that. Anyway, I'm the Kosher Butcher's wife, and we've been chatting to Machal Sushwani, and she is a wonderful South African cook. Because she has got some other recipes from all over Africa, but I decided to share these spicy chicken livers with you because I know that some people don't like peri-peri chicken livers, but they love livers. So this is her recipe. 500 grams cleaned chicken livers. Okay, so we get them directly from our butchers, already kashered. So you would need about 250 grams because you lose about half the weight when you're cooking, when you cook them. So because ours come already cooked, thank you, Bethton, for making it so much easier for us. You use 250 to 300 grams of cooked, cleaned chicken livers. Half a teaspoon paprika. 1 teaspoon of Portuguese chicken spice, which I think Robertson's make. 1 onion, chopped. 1 teaspoon of garlic minced. If you love garlic, you can add some more. Salt and pepper to taste. And she says 1/2 cup of fresh cream. We will obviously use 1/2 cup of Oily Whip. But the savory ones for savory dishes, not the blue one, not the one with the blue lid. So then she says, season livers with paprika and chicken spice. Heat a little oil in a nonstick pan and fry the onion and garlic. Brown the livers, leaving them slightly pink inside. Well, our livers are already browned, so we don't want to cook them for too long. Season with salt and pepper and pour in the Oily Whip. Simmer on low heat for 10 minutes and serve with a Portuguese roll or pot bread or things like that. So that's a quick and easy, simple, spicy chicken livers recipe. Of course, you know, recipes are only there to guide you. If you feel that you want to add a little bit more garlic, add more garlic. I know that I would add a lot more onion because I believe that onion is so important, gives that caramelized taste to the chicken livers, which can sometimes be a bit bitter. So I would definitely add more onion. And you can even add a little bit of tomato paste if you want. You know, be your own judge of character. Be your own cook in the kitchen. So then another recipe I'd like to share with you is her baked honey mustard chicken. You will need 8 chicken thighs, salt and pepper, 1 tablespoon of oil, 2 teaspoons of garlic minced, 1 onion chopped, 1/4 cup of honey, 3 tablespoons whole grain mustard. Schneider's is a nice one. Sometimes we can get master food, whole grain mustard. Then you'll also need 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, 1/2 cup of orange juice, and 500 grams of baby tomatoes, halved. You'll also need some fresh thyme. And, if you don't want to use fresh thyme, you can use the packet thyme. I would say about a teaspoon. Okay, of the dry thyme. So we preheat our oven to 180. We season the chicken with salt and pepper. We heat the oil in a saucepan that can go from the stove into the oven. Brown chicken thighs for a few minutes on each side and set them aside. Drain excess fat from the saucepan, and in the same pan, don't wash it, in the same pan, you add the garlic and onion for 1 minute until fragrant. Add the honey, because there's nothing worse than burnt garlic in a dish. Ruins the whole dish. Then you add the honey, mustards, and orange juice to the pan. Whisk it well and bring to the boil. So you're getting all those lovely bits off the bottom into this lovely sauce. And you reduce the heat to a simmer and season the sauce to taste. You return the chicken to the pan and add the potatoes. Transfer pan to the oven and bake for about 45 minutes or until the potatoes are soft. And chicken must be a lovely golden brown and cooked through. And then you can sprinkle the thyme on top, or you could add the thyme when you add the mustards and the orange juice. So that is a lovely, quite an easy, nice recipe to do for chicken. Then we go into one of my favorites, tender lamb shanks. So you will need, just for 4 people, maybe 5 if somebody's on diet, 4 lamb shanks, oil for frying, 1 onion finely chopped, 2 teaspoons of garlic minced, 1 tablespoon of fresh ginger, grated, finely grated, 2 large tomatoes chopped, nice red tomatoes, 1 tablespoon of brown sugar. Oh, just to go back to the tomatoes, when you want to take the pips out of tomatoes, I learned something quite easy the other day on television. Cut them into 4 and you just scoop the tomato seeds out of the tomatoes. Simple as that. 1 tablespoon, but if you don't mind the tomato pips in, that's also fine. 1 tablespoon brown sugar. 2 sprigs of fresh thyme, or you can use dried thyme. 1 cup of red wine. 4 cups of beef stock. Now remember, it's not beef stock powder. It's beef stock dissolved into liquid. Or if you have some of your own beef stock that you like to cook up. I know I always used to make stock out of bones for my kids when they're growing up to add to their food. So if you've got beef stock, wonderful. If you don't, just make it up with the cubes. 2 bay leaves. 2 large carrots chopped. 1.5 cups dried lentils, salt and pepper to taste. Simple. And what I love about her recipes is she's right. Everything is in the kitchen. Everything that you need is in the kitchen. We don't have to go out and buy 1,000 different ingredients. And your meat, just phone up your butcher and just tell him, please send me 4 lamb shanks. More butchers deliver today. So you don't even have to leave your home. In a large saucepan, fry lamb shanks until golden brown. Remove from heat, and in the same saucepan, don't wash it, in the same saucepan, you fry the onions, the garlic, and the ginger. Remember, don't burn the garlic. And you fry that until it's soft. Add the lamb shanks and the remaining ingredients, except the lentils. Cover with a lid and cook for 2 hours. Add the lentils and cook for further 30 minutes. Until cooked through, season with salt and pepper and serve with rice or mashed potato. Okay, now I'm just noticing here that she doesn't say that you must add the 4 cups of beef stock. So obviously you would add it, fry the onion, the garlic and the ginger until soft, add the lamb shanks Oh, and remaining ingredients. Okay, so that would include the beef stock. Sorry about that. I don't want to upset Mokhao. Okay, these are all such lovely, comforting meals for winter. Not that we've had such a cold winter, but let's pretend it's winter. Okay, so what we will need is 1.5 kilograms of, as she says, oxtail. I always use neck of lamb. And you ask your butcher to cut it about 3.5 to 5 centimeters thick. You want them quite thick. 1/4 cup of flour, oil for browning, 1 large onion chopped, 4 teaspoons of garlic minced, 2 carrots roughly chopped, 2 tomatoes chopped, a bay leaf, 4 sprigs of thyme, or 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme, 1 tablespoon sugar, 1.5 cups red wine, 1 cup of beef stock liquid, salt and pepper. So you toss the oxtail in flour until lightly coated, heat the oil in a large saucepan and brown the meat thoroughly. Remove from the pan and set aside. In the same pan, fry the onion and garlic till soft. Add carrots, tomatoes, bay leaf and thyme. Add the sugar and allow to simmer for about 5 minutes. If you want to add a sugar substitute, by all means. You simmer that for 5 minutes before returning the oxtail to the saucepan. Pour in the wine and the beef stock and allow to simmer for 3 to 4 hours or until oxtail is cooked and tender and falls off the bone. Check on it every 30 minutes to ensure that the stew does not dry out and that it's not burning at the bottom. Add more stock or water if necessary. Season with salt and pepper and serve it with rice or mashed potato. She cooks like me. I love her. Okay, so that's another recipe. Do we have time for one more? Okay, why don't we just do the classic potato salad? Okay, so for those hot days, which we've been receiving lately, 10 unpeeled baby potatoes washed. 1/2 cup of gherkins, finely chopped. Now, you know what I use there instead of gherkins? I use that wonderful new, it's chopped up to red pepper, onion, cucumber, and, oh, for the life of me, I can't remember who it's made by, but it's this pickled relish. And I use that, but obviously you can use gherkins, pickled cucumbers. And she says it's optional, but it's just such a lovely taste, this pepper. I'm just trying to think of the ingredients and the onions and the cucumber. You know, it's all pickled and it just gives such a lovely color to the salad. 2 hard-boiled eggs, peeled and chopped. Okay, it's also optional, but there's lots of people will eat egg in a potato salad, even if they don't eat eggs outside. Salt and pepper to taste and 1 cup of mayonnaise of your choice. Cover the potatoes with water in a pot and bring to a boil over medium to high heat. Then you reduce the heat to low and simmer until the potatoes are tender. You can stick a toothpick in and check it. Reduce heat to low and simmer until potatoes are tender. Drain and cool slightly. Cut into quarters. Place potatoes, gherkins, and eggs, if using, in a salad bowl and toss it gently. Season with salt and pepper and dress generously with mayonnaise. So you may have to add a little more mayonnaise. Some mayonnaises are thick, some are thinner, some are, you know, everybody's mayonnaise is different. And then you serve it chilled or at room temperature. And a little tip, just before you're about to serve it, add a little bit more mayonnaise to the salad. Just gives it that extra sort of tender juiciness. Well, I think that that is the end. That's as far as I can go. And I've really had a wonderful morning with you all today. So thank you for joining me. Thank you to Vuzzy. Thank you to Craig. I always forget to thank everybody and I feel so bad. So take this one as your yearly thanks. And thank you for joining me. And it was wonderful being with you. And remember, it's eat and meet that makes the meal complete.